Hello, everybody. Good evening. Glad that you're here tonight. About 3 weeks ago, Marshall asked me to fill in this class, and he said, "You can teach on anything, whatever you want." And I was like, "Anything? You sure?" So a couple of ideas came to my mind. Anyone who knows me knows that I don't necessarily like to do traditional studies a lot of the time. So I thought maybe aliens, and I asked Marshall specifically the other night, or this was actually 2 weeks ago, so do you have any material on aliens or supernatural, ghosts, or anything like that? And he looked at me, he's like, "Well, what exactly will you be teaching? Should I go out of town?" But I did settle on dinosaurs and the Bible. And the reason, partially, I've been interested in this topic, not only, you know, as a young man, any guy in here knows that as a little boy, you are kind of fascinated by stories of dinosaurs and things about dinosaurs from a small age. And the same was true with me, but having three little girls in the house, you wouldn't think that I get a lot of opportunities to talk about dinosaurs or think about dinosaurs. But if you've ever been to my house, and if you've been to Caroline and Natalie's room, you will look, if you walk in, the first bed you see is Natalie's. And on the side of the wall, there is a giant pinata that is partially torn open. I say torn open, not beaten open as you would normally do a pinata, in the shape of a dinosaur. Natalie loves dinosaurs. So we got her a dinosaur pinata for one of her birthday parties. And when the kids started beating it to try to get the candy out, she flipped out. She was like, "No, don't do that." And she literally hugged it. And we had to cut open a hole and pour the candy out. She is our dinosaur connoisseur. I didn't mean for that to come out that way, but that went out perfectly. She tells you, if you ask her when she comes out of class, what she wants to be when she grows up, she'll tell you a paleontologist. And she'll say, if you ask her what her favorite dinosaur is, she'll tell you it's an Apatosaurus. And everyone always goes, "What is that?" So that was kind of my inspiration for tonight's lesson. But, you know, it's funny, and it's not been as much lately, although there was a Jurassic Park movie that was released a year or so ago. But as I was kind of growing up, that's when, you know, Jurassic Park was huge and dinosaur studies had gotten really big again. But a lot of times as adults, I don't know that we kind of shy away from talking about dinosaurs in a spiritual context because we think, oh, I don't know. I'll just open this up because I have a ton of stuff and I might not get to all of it. The good news tonight is I see a lot of people in here that are way smarter than me, so you guys can help me out a lot tonight. So I'll open that question up. Why don't we, as adults, concern ourselves with this question, or this topic of dinosaurs and things like that? Any thoughts? Right. Right. It is. It's overwhelming. As I started studying all of these things, there for every little tidbit that I saw, I was like, "Oh, this is great!" And I would look it up, and there would be 10 articles that told me why that wasn't right, and so did a study 10 years ago that refuted that. And then it's very confusing. It's very overwhelming. Why do you think it's important that we study this and we know at least a little bit about this?
Deep age is a doesn't matter that much. The age of the earth is of no consequence to me. I don't know how old. I don't really care about it. But I'm a lot like some of the Renaissance people that said that the Bible is the book that tells us the way to go to heaven, not the way the heavens go. Which means I have divorced in my mind a lot of science, religion, controversy. And it doesn't matter,
right,
really, when you get down to it, because it has nothing to do about salvation.
Right.
But I think the big controversy is deep faith.
Mm-hmm.
And dinosaurs are always associated with deep age that would far transcend old Archbishop Usher's chronology of the earth. And that's why we shy away from it. We can't explain it to suit anybody, even ourselves, most
right,
days, so we avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't think it should be totally avoided. I think we can come to some agreement about it, just like we do a lot of other things, like covering and one cupism and things like that.
Sure.
So I hope that's where we go.
Yeah. Ooh, Paul?
I think we've got to take the fact that we see these skeletons in the Smithsonian. If we dig in the ground right here in Gardendale, we go to a house on the park road, we dug the basement, we got out some seashells. And I don't know what happened, I tried to keep them. But it proves to me something happened a long time ago.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's something I quickly found out when I was going through the study, was that there's so much that even people who, again, have a lot of letters after their name and have a lot of more knowledge about this than I do, they can't even agree with each other. And they can't. And how are we ever supposed to know what the facts are? But like Ben said, it's not something that pertains to our salvation. I would argue, though, and this is the whole reason I wanted to even discuss this in the adult class, would be that it's important for us to be able to teach children coming up in the church to, I guess, debunk or to let them know the dangers that Satan uses dinosaurs. Satan uses that to push evolution and to push a lot of these worldly ideas on our kids. Looking in some of Caroline's material that she brings home from school, and I asked her, I said, well, what do you guys learn about dinosaurs? And she said, well, we don't really talk a lot about dinosaurs. But some of the stuff that I've seen her bring home before, it's like subtle mentions of, you know, evolutionary history and millions of years ago, this happened, and this evolved from this, and this did this. And it's sneaky the way it gets taught, and the way that a lot of times it's pushed on our kids. It made me think of 2 Timothy chapter 3. This is a lengthy reading. The whole of chapter 3, going through all the way through chapter 4, talking about perilous times. It says, but know this, starting in 2 Timothy 3, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. That particular passage, the always learning and never being able to come to the knowledge of the truth, made me think of maybe science. And I know it's probably not the context necessarily of that verse, but it's the way a lot of these people think, that they know so much. And, oh, well, evolution is taught as fact. It's not taught as theory anymore. It is taught as a fact. And if you even suggest that that's not the case, you're crazy. How could you even suggest that that's not the case? I think I read a quote or a stat that in 85% of school textbooks, dinosaurs and evolution is somehow linked in teaching into today's schools. I don't know if a lot of you guys, or would maybe JoJo and Kimberly would have watched Friends, the show Friends, back in the day, and one of the main characters was a paleontologist. And there was an episode, I remember, that he could not believe that another character wouldn't believe in the theory of evolution. And he just went on and on that whole episode, and that, it made me think of that. And this study will by obviously no means be an exhaustive study of dinosaurs. I don't think you're going to walk out of here knowing everything you need to know. But one of the ways that I kind of went about getting prepared for this lesson was to go at it from what the Bible says and what can we glean from the Bible that might give us clues. Now, again, I don't think there's anything in the Bible that we can go to a verse and say, oh, it's clear, 100%. This is exactly what happened. But we do have clues and things in the Bible. A lot of people ask the question, how do you fit dinosaurs into the Bible? I don't think you can fit dinosaurs in the Bible. I think you can use the Bible to explain dinosaurs. I got a lot of compliments at home that she wanted me to keep doing the dinosaur thing. So, but I think we can use logic. Dinosaurs were land animals. Based on the fossils and the evidences that we have from a naturalistic point of view. If they were land animals, then they were created on day six. Genesis 1, 24, and 25 would tell us that. So, using this logic, T-Rex was a land animal. Land animals and man were created on day six. So T-Rex was created on day six. And this is, again, a part of something that people will scoff at. They say that dinosaurs existed or died out 65 million years ago. And man didn't come along for another, I can't remember how many million years, but a long time after that. But if we use biblical logic, it tells us that if these dinosaurs were land animals, then they were created along with man on day six. Okay, so this is where my study, I was hoping for some guidance and help from some of our older, more seasoned, wiser members. I got to talking to somebody at work about this today. So death did not enter the world until after sin in Genesis chapter 2. So did this include animals is my question. Did animals die before sin was committed? And I don't know the answer to the question. I'm asking you guys. So, right. Right. JoJo? Yeah. JoJo? Nobody knows. Come on. Yeah. Yeah. But did they eat that before sin? Okay. Anybody else there, Paul? Oh, we'll get to that. If we have enough time, we will get to that. But yes, I cover that too. Okay, this is actually, I went a little too far. So my study, I mean, there's no real evidence one way or another about whether or not animals also experienced death before sin. But could you imagine T-Rex in the Garden of Eden? It'd be a little weird, wouldn't it? Think it'd be what? Probably not. But, and that's another thing, how do we know dinosaurs acted the way they did in Jurassic Park? How do we know that T-Rex was this ferocious, terrible lizard? that it was depicted in most, I guess, depictions, whether it's Hollywood or anything. I mean, how do we know that that was the case? What? Right. True.
There's no indication, though, that the Garden of Eden, that everything was just contained to the garden.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence that Adam and Eve was not allowed to wander beyond the garden that I'm aware of.
Right.
And it wasn't until sin that they were kicked out of that area, out of the garden, and the garden was closed off and guarded, that in that area of the earth, they were no longer allowed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. After creation.
Well, I read a good analogy. What if we found, let's say Jurassic Park was about elephants. Let's say elephants did not exist today and all we had of elephants were these bones of elephants, right? How do you think elephants would have been depicted in the movies? If all we had of them were these bones. They had these great tusks. They were huge, powerful, we can assume from their bones. They might be running around, hitting people with their trunks, stabbing people with their tusks. So, just from bones, we don't necessarily can't necessarily assume.
Well, I think what they do is you have this descendants of reptiles,
right?
And you see how they act in life, and you look at their teeth, and you look at their short teeth, and how those animals act, which are aggressive animals,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a bunch of guessing.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I think he's right. You can't imagine a T-Rex crazy in the back.
Right. It's funny you say that, though. I'll get to something in just a second, but go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
That's all it could be.
Right.
Now then the other big controversy comes into age dating theories, like carbon dating for one, which simply discounted because it depends on cosmic ray bombardment. Cosmic ray bombardment differs from year to year.
Did everybody get that?
And it's 600 years old. And then it's explained away by the cosmic ray bombardment from the sun and sunspots and sunstorms during certain periods of time. So it's ever been up in circumstance.
Right.
It's not necessarily chemical.
No, you can have different environments. You can have four different environments just around this building alone.
Yeah, sure. They've been
wrong this
right.
Year just to keep them from going wild. I also think God has a sense of humor. The Bible says he's wiser than the wisest men. His weakness is stronger than the strength of men.
Right.
We can, some of us have got a little logic and say, okay, God used this. See, you're sitting up there laughing at all these people who think they know when the earth was created and the stars are rolling.
Sure. See, I told you it was smarter people than me in here tonight. David? Right. All right. So This was soft tissue from a Tyrannosaurus rex bone that was found, I think, in 2010 in Montana. This was used to kind of prove that this soft tissue, if it were millions and millions of years old, they wouldn't have been able to extract this. So there's our question that ultimately we've been discussing about its teeth and whether or not it ate. What would it have first eaten? And everything I read was plants when you compare it to the Bible record. And the reason is, in Genesis 1:29-30, it says, "And God said, see, I've given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed to you, it shall be for food. And to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. So if T-Rex existed in the garden before sin, then he was a vegetarian. Am I misinterpreting that? Me.
And you, if you can't outrun it.
I could not, no. That would be...
But watching that show, what they say, bears, no, they just eat meat.
Oh, yeah.
They will eat grass, they will eat berries, they will eat fruits and nuts.
Exactly. Same as this guy. This guy has those crazy-looking teeth, and he eats fruit. Can anybody tell me what that is a skull of? A guess? Anyway, it's a fruit bat. It eats fruit. And it's got sharp teeth. But if we just found that and didn't know what it was, well, we would assume, oh man, this thing really, now granted, a fruit bat's tiny, so we probably wouldn't assume that it runs around. But I'm just saying, it's logically, if you said, well, that thing has really sharp teeth, maybe it eats meat. Yeah, we assume a lot about those. So the word dinosaur is not in the Bible. And I've already kind of given away that, so y'all didn't see that. Why isn't the word dinosaur in the Bible? It's a modern word. There you go. Thank you. It is a modern word. It was invented in 1841 by a creationist, actually, Sir Richard Owen. And King James Version of the Bible was not translated into English until 1611, so 230 years before the word even existed. The word didn't exist when the first translation of the Bible, English translation. The word that is in the Bible, though, is dragon. And it's in there a bunch. Which the Hebrew literally means dragon, serpent, or sea monster. It's tenin, I believe. Ben, is that the correct pronunciation? So the word dragon in the Bible, and we're not going to read all of these, but these are all the occasions in the Old Testament that the word occurs, and there's just a friend I had to fill out the space. Could these occasions of dragons have been dinosaurs? And again, we don't know the full answer to that, but we can assume by some of this stuff that maybe it was. In Job chapter 40, the behemoth is talked about. Job chapter 40, starting in verse 15. The Hebrew translation of behemoth is literally beast of beasts. Starting in verse 15, "Look now at behemoth, which I made along with you," and this is God speaking to Job. "He eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hip, his power in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze, his ribs like bars of iron. He is the first in the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring him near his sword." Do you guys, I know in my translation, what animal do most commentaries and maybe footnotes have for behemoth? Elephant? There's another one. Hippo? So, well, and you never know. Could have been. So yeah, most commentators say it's either an elephant or a hippo. The reason there's a problem with that is it talks about his tail. moves his tail like a cedar. I don't know that those are really comparable to a cedar. I don't want to keep elephant and hippo backsides on the front of the thing in the church building for too long for people to walk in and wonder what we're talking about. But it's more consistent with a dinosaur, and more specifically, this type of dinosaur, which is Natalie's favorite. This is an Apatosaurus. So it is more consistent with that. Also in Job 41, verses 1 through 34, the Leviathan is mentioned, another beast that doesn't really have much of a place in animals that still exist today. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? Again, God comparing things that Job would know something about. Or snare his tongue with a line which you lower. In verse 9, indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? His rows of scales are his pride, shut up tightly as with a seal. One is so near the other that no air can come between them. Again, this description, it's hard to imagine something that could have been. Does anyone have a guess or a footnote on what this is guessed to be? A Nile crocodile, I've read that. Anybody else? Yeah, a sea creature, it would say a sea monster, something like that. I read some...
Loch Ness monster up here.
Do I?
That's the Loch Ness monster.
Yes. A plesiosaur. Yeah. Going through all of this, it's so funny. If we have time later, the number of legends and things that would fit with dinosaurs, I was like... It was like when you're the conspiracy movies where they have like the yarn traced to all of your conspiracies. That was me doing this study. There's also mention of flying reptiles in the Bible. Isaiah 14:29. Its offspring will be a fiery flying serpent. Isaiah 30 also mentions a fiery flying serpent that could have been a pterodactyl. It could have been another type of flying animal. But the point of kind of going through this is that there are biblical mentions of creatures that aren't easily explained by animals that currently exist. And I think the thing to note is in Job, this section of Job, or the section of Job we read before in chapters 38 and 39, he's talking to Job, demonstrating his superiority and his power. And he's using things in nature that Job would know something about. He mentions, I think, 12 different animals that Job obviously can compare. And why would he mention animals that don't exist or that are myths or fables if Job wouldn't have actually seen them? And again, whether or not they were the dinosaurs that we see or we think we know of, I don't know. But they could have been, and I think that if we come at this topic from a biblical view and a creationist view, then we could say, well, maybe it was. Because if you're not thinking that way, you would probably say, there's no way. Because men and dinosaurs didn't exist together, according to evolution. So the question that Paul asked earlier, dinosaurs on Noah's Ark, would they fit? Anybody have any would they fit? Let's do some math. I'm not good at math, so I didn't do this myself. The span of Noah's Ark, 437 feet long, 72 feet wide, and 43 feet tall. So that was 522 railroad stock cars in freight capacity, which, according to these measurements, could fit 125,280 sheep-sized animals in the Ark. The good news is, though, you wouldn't have to put, let's say, a sheepdog, two sheepdog, two Dalmatians, two dachshunds. How many dogs would you need? You just need two, because those other breeds could come. And the same thing is true with the dinosaurs.
Horses and everything.
Yeah. You just need two of the kind, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Could be the babies. And it likely was. In this example, dinosaurs are the same way. This is 11 different types of ceratopsia. So, but they wouldn't need all 11. They would just need two. And there are only about 50 dinosaur kinds. So 50 genesis type of dinosaurs needed to be in the ark. So two would mean only about 100 dinosaurs would need to be in the ark. This was a guesstimate of types. I say a guesstimate. They got pretty down to the numbers of how many animals there were on the ark. So mostly mammals, birds, reptiles, including dinosaurs, a total of 15,754 animals on the ark. So if we do the space available, we're talking 101,250 square feet. Birds would take up 2%. They didn't take up a lot of space. Mammals would take up the most at 28%. Reptiles would take up 15%. So we're only talking about, if these numbers are even close, these are conservative numbers. 46% of the ark is full. So you still got over half of the ark that is full. What was the other half for, you think? Food, I'm sorry? Exactly. Should have done something about those. So yeah, food storage. Where did Noah and his family sleep? You know, stuff like that. And I know that God knew how many people were going to obey him, but I would like to think that he would have left room if anyone else would have wanted to come to him and to be saved as well. How long did it take Noah to build?
104 years.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think Noah was just building an ark the whole time. I may be dead wrong. But I think the Bible indicates Noah tried to preach to him.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I'm sure he's building a boat because the Bible clearly tells us they had not had any rain or flood anything until those days.
Right.
He's building that boat out there in the dry land in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
One of us did that today. Yeah. And I'm sure that was said to him. Now, after several years, that might have went away. They just went by.
Right.
Most people, I'm sure he tried his family on the thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Try to convert them in their extra room. But I think God provided for them food and those who produce milk and other things,
right.
Chicken, eggs, whatever, helped the others out to be neat. And then God kept the method of rep or the carnivores.
Right. Something that I've learned, we've just at work have been moving offices. Something I think they have learned and we have learned that you always need more space than you think you do. You know, all of the stuff that we had crammed in a little office, we're like, man, I really needed more space than this. So it seems like the ark was pretty spacious. So that means if dinosaurs got on the ark, dinosaurs had to come off the ark, and so some dinosaurs did survive the flood. Sydney? What makes me think what?
They got on the ark, the dinosaurs.
I think that but we're about to actually go over why I think that. I think if they did, obviously the implication is if they got on the ark. Now, I think the reason we have so many dinosaur graveyards and fossil graveyards is because of the flood. Because the only reason, and again, I don't know the science necessarily behind this, but I've read many people say that what happens in fossilization is you need a lot of water, and a lot of the places where there are dinosaur graveyards, there are lots of dinosaurs in one place, which is unusual that some catastrophic event had happened, and the flood matches with that. And I think both things could be true. I think lots of dinosaurs did die in the flood, and some dinosaurs were saved, and some types of dinosaurs were saved. But I think we can also agree that after the flood, the world was a lot different. which might have led to dinosaurs dying out a little quicker. I think men, the age of man dropped drastically after the flood. Men didn't live to be quite as old after the flood. I think one of the reasons we can know that some dinosaurs did get off, or that I say we can know, I believe that we can make a good estimated guess, is a lot of things in history, dragons or dinosaurs in history. This is Saint George, and there's a story of Saint George and the dragon, of someone who came into a town in England, I believe, and killed a dragon, slayed a dragon that was eating the town's livestock. They were going to sacrifice a woman to the dragon to get it to go away, but Saint George, slayed the dragon, saved the lady, and converted the town to Christianity. This is just one of so many legends about people slaying dragons. And I don't think it's, it could be just a myth, but there's also evidence that the dinosaur bones have been found in some of these places where these myths occurred. Marco Polo, this is a terrible drawing. I couldn't find anything better than this. But Marco Polo, in his writings in AD 1271, noted that Chinese royal chariots were pulled by dragons. In 1611, a Chinese emperor appointed a position of royal dragon feeder. So we're talking 1611. This was really not that long ago. A royal dragon feeder. This was a city of Nerlac in France, was renamed in honor of the killing of a dragon there. The animal is described as being larger than an ox, had long, sharp, pointed horns on his head, and really did resemble what we know as a triceratops. Same thing, we can go through all of these. This was the Stegosaurus, a legend, an Irish writer recorded an encounter in AD 900 that looks a lot like what we can find from fossils as Stegosaurus or Kentrosaurus. This one I thought was really interesting. In 1572, again, this might be really interesting to me, but I'm sorry if you guys, it's not really interesting to you guys. In Italy, a peasant encountered a hissing dragon, and this guy killed it with his walking stick, hit it on the head, and it was a small dragon, dinosaur lizard. And he took it to a naturalist, and he studied it and reported that this was a reptile, one unlike he had ever seen before. And its description fits that of Tanistropheus, which was a dinosaur that we know about today. Rhamphorhynchus, Herodotus, a historian, a well-known historian that we can get a lot of interesting facts on history from. This all, you know, when I was reading about this all goes back to when Buddy Payne was here, and he was explaining how we can know that the Bible is true, and the manuscripts, the number, thousands and thousands of manuscripts of the Bible, and we, a lot of people are skeptical of the Bible's accuracy, but we'll take the word of guys like Herodotus and other historians, Pliny, and there's literally plenty of historians that we take the word of over some of the writers of the Bible. But even these historians had these accounts of dinosaur-like creatures, which leads us to believe that maybe they did exist sooner to now than we sometimes think. Obviously, dinosaur drawings on caves and things like that. How would they have known what dinosaurs looked like if man and dinosaur didn't live together? The first dinosaur bones weren't really unearthed until about the 1800s. So there's a lot of evidence that can tell us that dinosaurs and man existed together. Bishop Bell's tomb in Carlisle Cathedral, it was inlaid with depictions of creatures that could have been dinosaurs. There's so many, and I'm not going to go through all of these since we don't have much time, but all of these are different legends and myths, and all sorts of cultures have these in different parts of the world. Like you're saying, I think I read a stat that every continent has had some form of fossil found on it. So it's widespread. It's not just in one place. The one that I found the most interesting was the one from the African Congo, that the Mokele Mbembe, which there has been eyewitness reports as recently as 1990. I was like, whoa, wait a minute now. So that's pretty interesting stuff. We read of things that science has claimed are long since extinct and gone. Well, this was the Wollemi pine. They had thought that this was long extinct. They had found fossilized with dinosaur bones. But then in 1994, they found that it still was alive in a remote part of Australia. So it's not totally out of the realm of possibility to believe that something that science says is long since gone, that they might exist somewhere. I think that's just, it's fascinating. And honestly, the thing that this study has led me to believe is to see how awesome God is. And we use that word, that he created some of these things that are just awesome. That we just can't really fathom just the greatness of God. So, what killed the dinosaurs? I'm going to let you guys answer that one. I don't know. Any guesses?
Going back to your other question before, as far as dinosaurs being on the ark, it seems like in Genesis, the ark was supposed to be on the ark. And God told Noah, and of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort
in
the ark.
Yeah.
So if they were living
at the time, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. They were talking about something that was bigger than he understands.
Yeah.
And when you look up the Hebrew word, it just says large animal. And the next description is identity unknown.
Mm-hmm.
The Egyptian knew about the crocodile.
Right.
They still considered it a
crocodile. Yeah.
So that a dinosaur today, getting an alligator.
Well, yeah, and some of the descriptions like of the behemoth and the leviathan were talking like you couldn't tame them or you couldn't hunt them. But the Egyptians hunted crocodiles and hippopotamuses, which, again, would rule those things out. So what killed the dinosaurs? I'm not going to leave us in suspense. I don't really know, honestly, but there's a lot of things that could have killed. Let me ask this. Did animals go extinct today? Absolutely, yeah. A lot of things could kill the dinosaurs. I think a lot of them died in the flood, but the ones that were on the ark and did survive could have become extinct for a lot of different reasons. Disease, famine, hunted to extinction, changes to the environment. We talked about how the age of man drastically decreased after the flood. That could have been part of it. There's a lot of theories, a lot of ideas of what killed the dinosaurs and why we don't see Tyrannosaurus Rex running around today. But I think that's easily explained by the fact that we do have so many animals today that I think I read 4,000 or so are on the critically endangered list right now. So there are animals that went extinct not long ago that, my parents might, remember reading about going extinct, or maybe my grandparents has even seen some of these animals that are now extinct. Any comments? Anybody, any other ideas? What's that? Yes. Mm-hmm. I did. I used a lot of that. Yeah.
Because it could just happen. We read years ago.
Right.
It deals with a lot of this evolution of science. How Dean just mentioned, the carbon 14 dating is not as accurate. It can be varied because the sun rays, different atmosphere, different types of air. Those other data is more accurate. It's always unique. A few things that I've read and seen is, and some of these people are actually Christians or were scientists who didn't believe. Word converted down because they start studying and then start seeing
right.
Some of the stuff just adds up too much. There's something there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all of a sudden you have layers and layers of nothing, then boom,
right.
You have an explosion of life and strata. You can't explain that.
Doesn't make sense.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Before Chuck rings the bell, I think the thing that I took out of this was Job 12, 7 through 10 was a great verse that I wanted to share. But now ask the beast, and they will teach you, and the birds of the air, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, and the fish of the sea will explain to you. Who among all of these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In whose hand is it the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind? And I think that's kind of what I took away from this whole study, was that, wow, we serve an awesome God. Thank you for your time.